Good evening. The United States recognizes Israel's annexation of the Golan in Syria, an epidemic of lead in school water fountains, and broken elevators in the subways. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the news for Thursday, March 21st, 2019. President Donald Trump said it's time for the U.S. to fully recognize Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights, a political gift to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu just weeks before a tough re-election vote. Breaking with decades of U.S. policy, Trump's announcement could prove decisive in swaying Israeli voters, just as Netanyahu faces corruption allegations that have marred his campaign. It's also likely to draw rebuke from the international community, which never recognized Israel's sovereignty over the territory captured in 1967. Netanyahu met with U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in Israel, where he thanked Trump.
President Trump has just made history. I called him. I thanked him on behalf of the people of Israel. He did it again. First, he recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital and moved the U.S. embassy here. Then he pulled out of the disastrous Iran treaty and reimposed sanctions. But now he did something of equal historic importance. He recognized Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights. And he did so at a time when Iran is trying to use Syria as a platform to attack and destroy Israel. And the message that President Trump has given the world is that America stands by Israel. We're celebrating Purim when 2,500 years ago, other Persians, led by Haman, tried to destroy the Jewish people. They fell then. And today, 2,500 years later, again Persians, led by Khomeini, are trying to destroy the Jewish people and the Jewish state. They're going to fail again.
Corey Peterson-Smith is the Michael Ratner Middle East Fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. He says Trump has been giving Israel all at once and violating the human rights of thousands of Syrians in the process.
People who are familiar with Israel and Palestine may know that when the State of Israel was established, it was done through the forced expulsion of hundreds of thousands of Palestinians. In 1967, it also occupied Sinai Peninsula in Egypt, it occupied southern Lebanon, and it occupied a section of Syria called the Golan Heights, which has been disputed really from the start of the kind of Israeli settlement in the region, because it was identified as this militarily strategic place, the Golan. And so, you know, over time, Israel gave up its occupation of the Sinai Peninsula. It was forced out of southern Lebanon. Of course, it continues to occupy the whole of historic Palestine, including the West Bank and Gaza. And it also occupies the Golan Heights, which is this section of Syria. Now, when Israel invaded Syria, invaded the Golan in 1967, 130,000 people were actually forced out of that area and remain unable largely to return to where they live. There remain about 7,000 people who had been living there, and their freedom of movement is restricted, families are separated, and Israel has really been working on cementing its occupation.
This is solidly part of another country called Syria.
This is another illegal settlement of a country. And so you have, not only has Israel occupied and effectively annexed this part of Syria, Israel's also settled Israelis, as in the same way that Israel built settlements that continue to this day in the West Bank, in the same way that it built settlements in Gaza and in the Sinai, which have since been withdrawn. Israel built and continues to build and expand settlements in the Golan Heights on Syrian territory.
So since when does the international community, the UN and the United States, allow countries to seize parts of other countries and just settle people there as if it was might makes right and that's the end of the story?
One thing about Israel is that it's so blatant. I mean, they actually call these places settlements, and the people who live there, the Israelis who live there, are called settlers. And so the U.S. has, I think in a way, again, that's obvious to many people, very openly supported the settlement of Palestinian land, both in what's considered Israel proper and in the occupied territories. But as you say, there's less attention to the fact that they are funding settlements of the Golan Heights as well.
it's almost inviting a war. It's almost inviting counter-invasion and a guerrilla war by the Syrians to get their land back.
It's pretty incredible, actually, that Israel just occupies and openly settles another country's territory. And so, as we've said, the occupation of the Golan Heights doesn't get much attention. And really, Trump has called attention to the fact that the U.S. has rather supported Israel's settlement of the Golan, and now is doing so in a more open way. So this region that's largely been neglected, the occupation of which has largely been neglected, it's Trump who's calling attention to it and saying, yeah, Israel does occupy the Golan Heights. Israel has effectively annexed it, and that's a good thing. Israel should continue to do so. So Trump's calling attention to the Golan. I think that it's incumbent on those of us who recognize human rights, recognize the rights of those who are occupied there, for their self-determination as well. There's an organization called Al-Marsad, which is it's called the Arab Center for Human Rights in Occupied Syrian Golan. And so this is an advocacy organization that has documented actually how difficult it is for Syrians who are separated, people who are from the Golan, who are separated by the Israeli occupation, to actually return to their homes, to talk to their families, to communicate, and things like that. You actually have a situation where a common thing is for family members of the same family who live in the occupied Golan and who live outside of it meet each other at the border and have to talk to each other via megaphone, because those who are on the outside can't actually access their family on the inside. And Israel tightly controls the question of who's able to get in and out. So that is an ongoing abuse, and one that people in this country will recognize when we talk about the separation of families that's happening at the U.S.-Mexico border. This is another separation of families that Israel is carrying out. In terms of the question about the kind of military strategic importance of the Golan, that is the justification that Israel has used to explain why it has the right to seize territory. But of course, it's an outrageous thing to say, I'm going to seize your land because it's militarily strategic. And that's the basis to not only seize the land, restrict the movement of people in and out of that land, but also to settle Israelis there. It's absolutely outrageous, and it is, in fact, an act of aggression. And the whole, I mean, I think it's telling, the fact that Israeli policies about where it thinks it has the right to occupy and so on, that it's all a question of a calculation of military power, really shows that the whole project of Israel is about seizing land and maintaining the control of that land through force. I mean, that's really what's revealed when they talk about why they need the Golan Heights, because it's so strategically important.
And Corey Peterson-Smith is the Michael Ratner Middle East Fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. And you're listening to The News on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. In national news, millions of children nationwide are in danger of drinking lead-contaminated water in their own school. Moreover, at least 24 million children in the U.S. are at risk of losing IQ points due to low levels of lead exposure. These are two of the startling findings contained in a report, Get the Lead Out, published Thursday by the U.S. Public Research Interest Group, Education Fund, and Environment America Research and Policy Center. More than two-thirds of 31 states surveyed received failing grades in their efforts to make inroads into the contamination problem. John Rumpler is the Clean Water Director of Environment America.
In the wake of the crisis in Flint, Michigan, more and more schools have started to test their water. And those test results are confirming what we already suspected was likely true, which is that lead is getting into the water. And I just want to emphasize, this is not just in big cities like New York. Right across the Hudson River there in Bergen County, New Jersey, we looked at the testing data, and it found that 55% of the faucets and fountains tested at schools in Bergen County had lead in the water.
Why is that a problem?
Lead is highly toxic for kids. It can affect the central nervous system, lead to learning disabilities, loss of hearing, all kinds of problems. Even at very low levels of lead, the health experts, the medical doctors are telling us lead is bad for kids. In fact, the medical doctors are now saying that 24 million kids could lose IQ points due to low levels of lead exposure.
Something that could cause a loss of IQ points happening inside his school. Strangely, that's a strange thing to hear. Is that really what's happening?
It's outrageous. It's unacceptable, and we have to stop it. And the good news is we can. The good news is it's not that hard to solve this problem. We know that the problem starts with lead in our faucets and fountains, so let's get the lead out. Let's replace the faucets and fountains without so much lead in them. The standards were updated in 2014, so if your school's got faucets or fountains that are before 2014, switch them out, put in the new hydration systems with filters in them, put filters on, and start making sure that the water is safe for kids to drink.
Why is it being so delayed, though? If it's so easy, why do you need this report? Why isn't it just being done right now?
There may be any number of reasons in any given school district or any given community. Some people just don't know that this is a serious problem, so that's why we're releasing this report. In some cases, parents have been told, don't worry, the water does not exceed the federal EPA standard. Well, the federal EPA standard of 15 parts per billion is a standard for water utilities to determine if they have a systemic problem. It's 15 times as high as the American Academy of Pediatrics says should be the limit for water in schools. So parents sometimes are not getting the right information. And, you know, it is going to cost money to solve this problem, so it's going to take some political will to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. How about New York City? Anything that stuck out about that?
Well, New York City, I think that there are, some positive things that New York City public schools have done above and beyond what the state was requiring. Initially, when New York City took a look at this problem, they did their testing the wrong way. They flushed out all their pipes. Mark Edwards, national expert at Virginia Tech, who helped Flint residents uncover their problems, was quoted in the New York Times as saying those results should be thrown in the garbage. And to their credit, New York school system did throw those results in the garbage and retested. And they found a dramatically bigger problem of lead contamination when they did the retesting. And they have remediated, at least in many cases. They have actually replaced some of the faucets and fountains that were causing these problems. So maybe New York City has not done everything that it needs to do, but it has taken some important steps in the right direction.
Are there any people at the other end of the spectrum, any states and localities that are doing nothing that need to be pressured more highly to do something?
Well, right here in Massachusetts, we had to give Massachusetts a grade of D because the state so far has not enacted the kind of policies that would protect kids and the water that they drink. We're hopeful that some proposals that are moving through the state legislature and the governor's budget here in Massachusetts will, in fact, dramatically improve the situation. But as of today, Massachusetts gets a D, and 22 states across the country get an F in our report card, just completely failing to protect kids. States like Florida, Texas, Minnesota, all of them failing to protect kids from lead in drinking water at school. The main thing for parents to know is that there's lead in the water delivery system, and therefore there's a risk of contamination. The second thing to know is that there's no safe level of lead. So don't be fooled when officials tell you, 15 parts per billion, that's fine for your kid. It's not. And the third thing is, this is not rocket science. We can do this, right? We can replace those faucets. We can replace those filters, faucets and fountains. We can put filters on and start protecting our kids. Our kids deserve a safe, healthy future. They deserve clean drinking water, and we can do this.
John Rumpler is the Clean Water Director of Environment America. And the lack of elevators in New York City's subway system is a major pain point for riders with limited mobility, and a recent analysis from Transit Center shows the lifts that are in place are chronically unreliable. The nonprofit advocacy group dug into Metropolitan Transportation Authority data to determine how often elevators break down across the system. They found that 84% of subway station elevators reported at least a week's worth of outages in 2018. Colin Wright is director of Transit Center.
What we found is that at 85% of so-called accessible subway stations, the average elevator was out of service for more than a week in 2018, and we gave those stations an F grade. Only one elevator in the entire system never went down last year, and that was at a station that opened up in September after September 11th. So what we found doesn't come as a surprise to anyone who's in a wheelchair and is trying to navigate New York City subway system, but the elevators that do exist, the few that do exist, are extremely unreliable. The MTA has set a goal for itself of an elevator being out of service for no more than 2 weeks a year. And we think that that's too low of a goal. So we're calling on the MTA to raise the goal to at least 7 days out of the year of downtime. The number of unscheduled breakdowns that occurred in about 250 elevators maintained by New York City Transit last year was over 14,000. That's about 55 breakdowns per elevator. Some of the worst performing elevators in the system were in some of the busiest stations in the system. The worst elevator in the system was at Atlantic Barclays Center in Brooklyn. That was down about half the time last year. The two busiest subway stations and two of the busiest subway stations in the system, Times Square 42nd Street and 42nd Street Grand Central, were among the 10 most unreliable stations in the system. What we found was that the average elevator in Times Square 42nd Street was out of service for a total of 30 days. So the average elevator in that system was out of service for 30 days last year. The average at 42nd Street Grand Central was out of service for 24 days. You know, there were 800 and almost 850 incidents of entrapments where people were, you know, reported being trapped in a malfunctioning elevator. That's more than two a day. So, you know, imagine trying to plan your day around these unreliable elevators. It's nearly impossible. That's why so many people who, you know, have limited mobility avoid the subway altogether, because they can't trust that they'll be able to get out of the subway system when they've arrived at their destination.
And Colin Wright is director of Transit Center. And that's some of the news for Thursday, March 21st, 2019. The news was produced with Linda Perry and Gabriel Young. Our engineer is James Irsay. For the WBAI Evening News, I'm Paul D'Arienzo in New York. Thanks for joining us.